Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Assalamu alaikum, kia ora, and welcome to In Transit, the series where we center the many journeys of immigrant ethnic women navigating life in Aotearoa, New Zealand, with me, your host, Hafsa. In each episode, I sit down with women who share their journeys of settling in a new land, the challenges they have faced, and the resilience that carried them through. From cultural clashes to quiet triumphs, and from moments of doubt to deep appreciation. These are raw, honest, and hopeful conversations. Whether you're new to the country or simply curious, this is your space to listen, learn, and connect. Kia ora and welcome to another episode of our podcast. And today I have got another new guest who will be introducing herself.
Hello, kia ora. My name is Li Ying. I'm a Chinese, also a police officer from Central Christchurch.
Nice. So when did you come to New Zealand, Li Ying?
I came to New Zealand 2004. It's under the government's skilled migration program.
So did you come in as a police officer, or did you come in as a different, with a totally different skill set?
I came here totally with different skill set. When I applied for skill migration at the time, that's from my business background and my media background.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about your background in what kind of roles you had been and what kind of qualifications you had?
So I remember the time you have to satisfy immigration that you have at least 6 years working experience. You need to have a university degree and you need to have a financial means to support yourself in New Zealand. So when I was in China, I finished my uni studies in international business and business management. So my first job was in China, working for import-export corporation, conducting, import exporting for machinery and equipment. And, Chinese people are working really hard, and I work 7 days a week.
Wow.
In the weekend, I work for Saturday, Sunday, Friday night. I was in the TV station, radio station, recording program, also writing for local newspapers as a freelance.
Oh, wow.
So I work 7 days, in China. But it seems normal because everyone does the same thing.
So, well, how did you come to know about New Zealand, and how did you decide to come here?
Well, I was in university, so at the time they have a trend, I would say, many international Chinese students want to go overseas to study, so that they have classes about New Zealand promotion, promote New Zealand as the beautiful country, welcoming attitude towards Asia students and Asian migrants. So there was a huge promotion about New Zealand. And when I was in China, I thought, okay, I want to explore my horizon. I want to go overseas. I'm going to try to come to New Zealand because it seems like New Zealand is a very nice country, and especially the attitude, they welcome migrants.
So when you came here, did you know anyone here?
No, no one. So I found my accommodation on TradeMe when I was in China.
Right.
And on the day arrival, I think my future landlord actually came to airport to pick me up, which was very nice.
Yeah. And how was that first day in New Zealand? Like when you landed, what did it feel like? What did it smell like?
I think on the day I landed in Auckland Airport, I realized, oh, here, not many people. Now I have much larger space around me. And the local people, at the time I still call them not kiddie, I call them foreigners, and very friendly. They say hello to me, they smile at me. And the sun is really bright. So when I came out from the airport, I was like, oh, sorry, I forgot my sunglasses, because the sun's really bright, shining on top of an Auckland airport.
And what was the most striking difference between, you know, you mentioned about a lot of space and the sun, but was there anything very specific about the difference you found on the day you landed and maybe going into next few months of living in New Zealand, about what was the biggest difference for you between China and New Zealand?
I think it's the speed, slower pace, people walk slower, talk slower, and doing anything in the easy pace. It's not like China in the hustle bustle fierce competition, you know, everything has to be fast. So I feel quite relaxed a few weeks in Auckland after arrival.
Right. And then how did that journey in New Zealand progress? Like what was your pathway like after you came here?
So I wasn't really planning anything specific to do. And when I arrived in Auckland, I thought, okay, I've been working too hard in China. I might spend a few months, just do no work, travel a little bit. And at the time, I still have some savings. So I said, okay, 6 months, I don't have to work. I'm just going to travel to understand New Zealand a little bit. And one day I thought, all right, I might just find a job to see how difficult to find the jobs I like. So the first few months, I would say I went to other restaurants, supermarket, to see what's different over in the supermarket. And I see cheese, dairy product a lot. And this kind of product in China is very cheap, very expensive in here. That was cheap before. And nowadays it's not different price. So my leisure time is spent really fast. And until I decided to find jobs, I sent through my CVs. The first job I was offered to working in the farmer's department as AR customer counter manager for Shiseido.
Right. So and then how did that experience go? Did you enjoy being in there, and how did that?
No, I didn't accept it. So I went to the department and shake hands with a general manager and saying they're welcoming, and you know, they say we should you come on board to work with us, and I'll give you a few days to think about it and declined it because it's not something I want to do. Because I thought I want to use my skills. Maybe in something I can work still, import exporting, helping China, helping New Zealand, the economy, and something I'm familiar with. So I declined their offer until one day. There was, when I contacted the local communities, there was a Chinese New Zealand TV station. They bought off the C4 at the time for three, 4 hours in the afternoon session. They are looking for a, you know, professional to actually interview local people, attending all the events and talk about their experiences. I thought, okay, this kind of thing I'm feel familiar with because I had my experience back in media in China. And I say, okay, and it was fun for me to understand the society. That's why I took up the offer. That was fun time. I interviewed the local celebrities, asked them the attitude about new migrants, and their advices to migrants how to help them to integrate with the local communities, whether they are welcoming and other cultures and performances and arts, something like that.
And what did you find, like, in your interviews? I'm just curious to know, what did the other migrants find?
I think all the interviewees are very excited to know we're actually from another ethnic media. And I think at the time they want to explore their arts and also the connections with other countries as well. So I feel welcomed. They want to know more about what can we do, can we offer for their market, and whether there are any cooperation opportunities. So that was interesting.
And how long were you doing that for?
I did it about 6 months. And 6 months, we also have like an in-house studio talk show. That's
Yeah.
where I invited the community policing team from Auckland Central Police Station.
Ah. Was that your introduction to the police?
Yes. So that was during an interview, about 1 hour talk show with them. They introduced the concept of community policing, and New Zealand police community policing concept actually being introduced from Shanghai police. They recall back to Shanghai, every apartment complex, there is a local police station and there. And there are civilian police officers, there are volunteers, the many people helping to secure, to make sure the community is safe. So that concept introduced to the New Zealand police back in the 80s. And that interview was gave me a idea, impressions to make me think maybe that could be something I want to try because I never done it before. And I like to understand the New Zealand societies, different layers of societies. And maybe it's kind of job for me to fast track me to gain these understandings of New Zealand.
Right. So then, and then how did you get into police here?
So at the time, they say, well, we are recruiting officers from different cultural backgrounds to representing the community. Because New Zealand has been becoming diverse with many people who are born overseas, speak different languages, and they won't have a police force to represent that demographic makeups of the community. So that gave me a feeling of welcome and also a challenge because they talk about you have to go through physical components, academic studies, online studies, home visit, and training. So I thought, okay, I'll take up the challenge. And in the meantime, having some fun to lose weight because I eat a lot of dairy products when I was in New Zealand, I put so much weight on. And they're talking about the running groups together with the police officers. You can get to know more about the jobs that triggered my interest.
Oh, nice. And so how was that onboarding? Like, I know you joined New Zealand Police and you've been there for a while now, isn't it?
21 years so far.
Oh, at New Zealand Police.
Yes,
Wow.
it's a long time, I know.
And I think that switch from media and comms background and your space into police. Have you at any point in time have to use the skills that you had in media and comms in police?
I think the best weapon for a police officer actually is not taser, not guns, not batons. It's about communication. So, because that skill transferable, my communication skills from the media experience greatly helped me to communicate with people I deal with on the street or in a community or with victims, offenders. We call them victim, offender, or witnesses. So, that's kind of skills I think you can be utilizing any kind of jobs in New Zealand.
So let's talk a little bit about you've been here about 21 years, 2004, and it's 2025 now. In terms of your experiences, like what were some of the obstacles or challenges you faced in terms of settling in, not related to your role, but in general, what were some of the things?
I think if you're talking about the cultural shock, that people use that phrase to describe something you're unfamiliar with, is the social connections. You're trying to build social connections with locals can be obstacle to new arrivals because some of them might have misconceptions about your intention. Because in Chinese culture, for example, we are quite like harmony, and I found in a workplace, even in a social setting, and the local people quite competitive. They are quite individual based interest rather than this collective social interest. I noticed that, and especially in my work environment. I can use the phrase like the stronger survive. So you are actually not just learning the Kiwi culture, you're learning the police, specific police culture as well. It can be challenging to new arrivals. If you're not grow up in here, you don't have this social familiarities, social connections. That's next layer of difficulties added on you when you're trying to integrating into the local community.
So, in your experience, day-to-day experience as well, do you see a lot of these challenges that that you come across with immigrants because you are in the ethnic liaison team, isn't it? Yeah. So, do you see that there is that because of this misconceptions about immigrants and their intention, is there friction in the community around that?
I think it's about people, whether they actually, the local people or Kiwis, we can't really even define what Kiwis are now. The local resident people are not very open-minded to understand migrants, their motives or ambitions in a workplace or even in a community. This is quite conservative. Thinking about when you roam, do the Romans way rather than build a bridge to have the two-way street, two-way communications. And in workplace, you often hear people making comments. I would say quite ignorant, but they think this kind of ignorant comments acceptable in the workplace. That requires much more education to individuals or to work groups, and which is a long way to go because you have to have this management to buy in to support your initiatives or program you want to part of education, educate them what is like, what other people thinking, different perceptions and different values and beliefs. But it has been a very difficult work to do to push through.
Because if people are not welcoming, then there is that, like you pointed out, about that social connections, the challenge around building that network. Was it easy for you to build those social connections when you came here?
No, I'm kind of person actually. I'm not really sociable, and still here. I'm quite focused, enjoy my own time, do my own thing. I didn't find some similarities when the migrant they arrive here. They feel lonely. I never had that experience. I'm quite comfortable on my own and to explore or to learn new things. I think my nature, I'm quite curious about everything, which conquered that loneliness because I want to see something different from, different compared to the things I have been doing in China. So every piece of experience for me is exciting. And living in New Zealand experience, even sometimes the rejection you went through the rejections for me. Is okay, then I will try something else. I'm quite optimistic about my abilities and my learning opportunities from other people. Yeah, that's what I will say.
And I'm just, reflecting back on what you said, Ling, about curiosity helped you conquer loneliness. Like, I know you mentioned you traveled a little bit across when you came initially. Was that one of the ways on how you conquered that?
I'm quite adaptable. So what I mean by that, if you throw me into another country, I'm easily to mingle with the local people, have enjoyed the food and culture. Because I'm easily get bored. If we live in China, I say, okay, there's such a huge world I need to explore. I need to understand how other people's values, beliefs, and also how the way they live, they work. So I traveled to Europe to Syria. That was a work trip when I was in China, and to understand different cultures, to understand what make them tick, what they value. Majority of country I traveled is quite a collective society, but they do have a hardworking ethics around. And European countries are quite individual, interest focused. But you see, the country is not just it's very diverse, very multicultural. It's the future of this world. So if you have the monocultural thinking, still have that is not going to be better prepared to see the future generation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that because yeah, New Zealand is becoming very diverse. So I guess my question now to you is around your own personal identity. What is your cultural identity, and does it matter to you?
I think I'm very proud to be a Chinese. This matters to me a lot. So when I say I'm Chinese, people often want to hear more about it. So the Chinese culture, values, harmony is the biggest one. We don't want wars. We don't want a conflict. We're trying to avoid it. We want to build harmony for everyone, for individuals, for families. We are have this social obligations to individuals in the families, in the societies. We want to have this social stabilities start from individual nuclear family and goes on to the society and goes on to the country. So it's a very collective culture. We want to work and cooperate with other countries and to maximizing the advantages of everyone, every country can offer. So being a Chinese is being in understand the traditional culture, beliefs, values, and respect your ancestor and learn and heritage the ancestor wisdoms to work and cooperate with other people and culture too.
So at any point in time in New Zealand, did you experience at a personal level any conflict in that val in those values that you have been brought up with and you appreciate because of being a Chinese origin New Zealander now, versus what the New Zealand culture had? Was there any time a difficult decision that you had to make, without getting into too much detail if you don't want to share, but have there been times when you've had to choose?
You mean choose the values or choose the make a decision?
Yeah, choose a because you have a very collectivist approach, because that's
Yeah.
how the Chinese society is. But you are in New Zealand, which is probably more of an individualistic society because of the Western value system. So have you had to choose sometimes when there were difficult decisions to make, and which one did you choose?
So, for example, after earthquake, and our police association want to help people with the families to relocate them so that we police officers, can focus on work, helping the local communities. And they help them, the children and partners, to relocate to another city on their on the association's cost. So when they are rang in, we say, okay, I don't have any families here, I don't have children, but I have parents here. Are you able to help to fly my parents back to Auckland, stay with friends, so that I can focus on rescue work in here? And they responded saying, no, sorry, your parents are not part of your family. So that was a big shock for me, which I understand now, because in New Zealand, your parents apparently belongs to another family. But in my culture, in my culture, the most important thing, because we have that respect. Parents, ancestors, looking after them. That's our obligation.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Because that would be challenging if, and I think I came across this earlier as well, that your parents aren't considered as your family for some
Yeah.
other thing, completely different thing altogether. But I obviously it was a shock for you. So have you at any point in time had to explain this to anybody in your work, colleagues or anything, around how our
Yeah,
system?
even now, for example, if my parents got sick, I have to explain to them I want to looking after them. Can I take sick leave? And they say, not really, because they are not your children. Okay, but I have to explain to them, one, they don't have the language ability and they don't drive. They actually just like children now. So it's not really that much flexibility at work. It depends on the managers as well. If some managers are very okay with that, they understand your culture, they understand what you're trying to say, but some managers has no, they say no because it's quite rigid. This rules is a rule. There's another thing I noticed about New Zealand is the lack of flexibilities on some rules to put more understanding towards individual cases rather than rules.
Yeah, because you know that's I'm sure there are other people out there who have had similar things. But let's say if they've got family here and they're elderly parents who they've got, because the dependent sick leave doesn't qualify them. It's only children, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, interesting. I think that's a very important point to discuss, though, in this conversation around whether there needs to be that cultural intelligence that needs to be built in into organizations around, understanding the different cultures, at least the dominant ones that are present in New Zealand, to look at our value systems. Do you have anything like this in, or have you come across any organizations in your work who are doing any cultural competency slash cultural intelligence work for their staff and their higher ups?
I think I'm one of them. Many people that ethnic, they're trying really hard, want to educate or promote this cultural competency training to the senior management. But my experience tells me this is not priority, especially in the police. So the priority is response at the moment, and also support frontline. But I thought this kind of piece of work is actually supporting them to better engage with different ethnicities. And it's still a long way to go for them to realize this is actually helpful.
Yeah, I think that because all of this then ties in with the well-being of the individual, isn't it? Because you are then having to talk about the difference in these value systems, which then starts to put pressure on individuals who are in the working environments, but then are having to navigate these competing values, which may be contrast as well.
Sometimes you heard their comment saying, oh, when these people came to New Zealand, they should adopt our values and beliefs, but they still bring their own values and beliefs in here, and that prevent them from integrating into New Zealand society, which I think that comments are totally wrong. Because you grow up with this value and the beliefs, you can't change them, and that's actually representing who you are. So you're expecting these people come in to change, totally change, swap from their value to your value, rather than finding similarities between values, how we work together. That's a very not really smart move or understanding. So I would say.
I think you've raised a very important point around, Liying, about the similarities, using that to just start off the entire building of the bridges that you mentioned earlier about building those bridges across cultures. But I also feel at some point in time, the Asian and the African, and maybe even the South American, value systems in the Middle Eastern value systems have a lot of common ground
Have a lot in common, yes.
with the Maori value system, isn't it? So
Yes.
do you have do you a lot of work in that space as well around looking for those similarities when you're working, I know you work in the ethnic community space, but given your role, have you had any interactions even within the Maori community to see for those similarities?
Yeah, I encourage conversations with these similarities by going to the Hui, going to the Marae, and talk about their values, our values, because Maori society is quite a collective as well. The collective values, collective consciousness, and people work together to build this community. And building Marae as a community gathering place is a typical example of that. Yes, we've been encouraged and enabled the conversations going. But even at a workplace, you see the majority of the everyone's busy, understand that. Majority of them still, we don't have big number of Maori Pacific and ethnic police officers in Canterbury. We are still predominantly white people in here, and their cultural and value system is very different.
Because your experience in Auckland would have been very different in terms of the kind of communities you interacted with over there. Would that be true?
Yes, because Auckland now become much more diverse. About 25 to 30% people who are born overseas. In Christchurch, we can see the trend is coming up as well, especially after COVID when there's so many migrants here. I think it's the future. I'll give you an example. I was in one of the primary school a few days for their International Day, and they have 49 different nationalities. They spoke about 59 different languages. And
Wow.
that's the future. That's the future of New Zealand in one of the primary schools. If you don't look at that, if you don't prepare for the future, and that won't achieve a great collective result for a organization.
Yeah, so I want to go back to the point where you mentioned that the skills you had in the media and comms space have helped you or have assisted you in your role as a police officer. Do you think there are specific skills that you can mention that we should really have as an incorporation into, let's say, organizations around building that better understanding about each other?
Yeah, I think to put it easy, you make other people's work easier. You make officers work easier. So if you can solve the problem for them, they will appreciate it. You build your capacity and ability and case by case by helping investigations, helping individual officers. Language is one thing, but the cultural understanding and the cultural protocols, especially when we have our operational needs. That will help them greatly. They will appreciate that. So it's not a short-term effort. It's actually a long-term. And being in the job for 21 years, I helped so many cases, so many officers. I'm not talking about my own ability as a, for example, I speak Mandarin, I speak English. It's more about liaising them to put on the right skill, people and skills for them as well. When I'm talking about communication skills, I benefit from this growing process of being in the police for 21 years because before that I worked with nice people. Okay. And here you're working with different people, a different layer of societies. So any piece of work in the police is not just one work. We talk about more than 45 different roles. I work with custody, which is dealing with the criminals, we call them offenders. I will work with defense lawyers who we understand the mentalities, we know how to negotiate, we have a good result for the victims. We talk to, I talk to the to offenders, we call them offenders, asking why did you do this? Why are you targeting Asian ethnic communities? What makes you think they're more fragile and vulnerable? So this is all learning from them. Yeah. So communication skill I'm talking about is communicate in psychological understanding, psychology and behavior and patterns of actions as well.
Because that would be essential in moving forward, isn't it? And that too, moving forward in a direction that is going to build better futures for everyone who's coming into New Zealand and who have been here for a while to understand each other better. I think one of the other questions that I also had in that space was around the cultural protocols. And I don't know if there are any resources that are already there to assist organizations in there. Is there like something available or a resource there to explain cultural protocols
Yes,
to?
we do. We do have a cultural religious protocol booklet for individual officers, and every officer had their cell phone. They will put them to the check-in resources. If they want to know what to do, they can look at it. So this kind of training and resources we produce for frontline or any officers. Of course, when they approach my group, we say this is a general guide for you. Is you to understand each family's, each victim's, you have to speak to them.
Yeah.
You have to respect their culture and ask them what they need rather than just put the protocol saying, I learned from this book, this is what they're going to do. Because every individual have varieties, they're different, you know?
Yeah. So you have this in New Zealand police, but is there
Yes.
anything that other organizations have that you may have come across?
I think Ministry of Ethnic Communities, they do have a set of resources about engaging different ethnicities and the cultural protocols. They also have a cultural competence online training as well. And in the police college, we do have a session for them to understand different cultural and religious protocols too in the police college.
All right. Okay, yeah. Because of your heavy involvement in the community, I'm guessing that there is that emphasis, because then I'm looking at other organizations, and I don't think a lot of organizations have this kind of guidelines around cultural protocols, even cultural competency around understanding, you know, what if you were to hire someone from the Middle East, or you know, have someone who's come from the Middle East, what does that look like for your organization, and how you can help the person actually feel like they are part of your organization? Yeah, because
That's important.
one of the things that I have learned, you know, again, I think that was what it was, someone who I had invited as a guest speaker, was about the whole idea of the after hour drinks, which a lot of cultures, you know, in Asia, Middle East, it's not something we do.
For example,
Like, you know, the after hours drinks that a lot of
oh
organizations
yeah
have. You
yes,
know.
I remember that vividly, because it's the way, it's a social connection. Drinking together is building bond. You know, when I was in police college, that's the big thing I don't want to do, because everyone finish training, go to the bar, have a drink together. If you make mistakes during your course, you have to be punished by drinking a jack, called a jack session. But nowadays, that all has been cancelled out, which is good.
Yeah.
It's the TV culture, it's the bonding culture. Because you, especially in the police, you work with someone, you expect that people, that person, your partners to back you up in a better situation. But by bonding together, drinking together, is actually to understand more. Or crack jokes together, which I always feel awkward because I don't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I had someone else also mention that she didn't go to these after hours, and she was in the corporate sector, you know, big banking sector kind of a thing, and she didn't do this as well, and which meant that when it came time for promotion, yeah, she didn't get it.
Yeah, because they thought you're not really part of a group. You know, sometimes they say you don't have to drink, but you can just have a cup of juice, have a laugh with them.
Yeah.
But well, so I think when I finish work, I want to go home. You know, I want to have a good sleep. I want to spend time with family members.
Yeah.
Yeah, but apparently this kind of culture, gathering, after work drinks, after work gatherings, very important in Kiwi culture.
Yeah, and that's what she said, you know. She said she was very keen to just go back home, and she had a son, so she wanted to spend time with her son, and not doing the after hour drinks meant that she lost out on quite a few promotions, because when she was competent, she was skilled, you know, she did everything by the book, but she just didn't follow this particular protocol, the unwritten protocol of going out on Friday night, or you know, whenever, and which meant that it cost her her promotion.
That could be one of the reasons, I believe.
Yeah, no, I think that was one of the reasons she said. But anyway, so I think there is that definitely a need to build those cultural bridges, isn't it, around us trying to understand each other better. So then, you know, we are not making assumptions, because one of the things you also mentioned was there is that assumptions that people are making, and there's misconceptions about what we know about each other, which can also become a barrier sometimes.
Yes, definitely.
So if I were to ask you to describe life in New Zealand to someone in China, let's say they've not seen any of those lovely promo videos about New Zealand or anything, how would you describe New Zealand to them?
I would say New Zealand is a relaxed space, is a relaxed place, a very strong focus on work and the life balance, and also an expensive way of life. And also you will have a sense of faith and openness due to this low population density. A very strong emphasis on informal interactions and the community engagement. Kiwis are known for their welcoming and friendly nature, majority of them. They tend to be laid back and value a very healthy balance work and leisure. It's a place you can relax, not to stress out too much. And also is a place you enjoy this peace rather than 24/7 and activities.
Which could be good or bad for you, because depending on
Oh, it
what you
depends on
like.
what would you like, what would you prefer?
So I guess the other question then would be, if someone was to coming to New Zealand, what attitude that should they come with?
The attitude, open-minded, is important to understand the Kiwi way of life, to understand there are unwritten rules and rigid structures and procedures with excessive layers of approvals with a little flexibility. And there are bureaucracies focused on, I would say, time-consuming and energy-consuming, and which can also often slow progress and stifling creativity and innovation. But a lot of things is different.
Yeah, I know you mentioned open-minded in there as well, because that is something I think a lot of people need to come in with around that. And what do you say to people who are coming into New Zealand and are driven by food?
It's good things about New Zealand become more diverse. You see, in the future, about 25% of ethnicities, you can try any kind of food you want to. Just go to the cultural events, go to the community gatherings, and go to the potluck sessions to enjoy each other's food.
And in terms of building social connections, what has been your experience on, let's say, because what I hear from a lot of women and a lot of people I talk to is that they feel lonely when they come to New Zealand, and that then leads to a lot of other challenges in their life. You know, that the challenges are at a woman level. They, you know, it impacts their well-being and them being able to take care of their families. For I think for the men, if they don't have those social connections, it then impacts and starts to lead towards domestic violence or anything of those sorts. What are some of the ways you think they can build these social connections or at least have their network when they come here?
I think the most important thing is be proud of who you are to understand what kind of social gaps you can fit in for the New Zealand as a society. And don't feel you're new, you know nothing. And think about what can you offer to the society, to the Kiwi people. Also to make connections with the community and to find like-minded people to understand what you can start building in your small circles before you reach the bigger circle of the Kiwi circles. I think it just be more flexible and don't be so easily get offended or everyone experience denial and rejection, but use it as a next chance to conquer more challenges in the future rather than feeling defeated. Because everyone came here with a lot of skills and experiences. A lot of people don't have that. And your international experience will definitely benefit the society as a whole.
Yeah, it's very good advice, Liying, around that. And I think you're a perfect example for us to look at in terms of having those completely different skill sets and being in police, but with so much knowledge and cross and skills around media and comms, which have obviously helped you in this role. and in terms of guiding you through that. So I like that advice that you're giving, that you don't forget you've got skills. So my last question before we sort of reach conclusion of our chat, I know there's a lot of questions that I can ask you, but I think my main question is around, does New Zealand feel like home to you?
Yeah, I would say yes. China's like home to me. New Zealand is not a home for me. I feel comfortable living and working here. That's a place you call home. I wouldn't give a definition what is home, but as long as you feel happy, comfortable, you can start your own family, you can still celebrate your origins, your ancestors' wisdom in the place you feel comfortable and happy to live and work, that's a home.
Nice. Thank you very much for that lovely
You're welcome.
conversation.
Thank you very much. It's my privilege, really.
Thanks for joining us on In Transit. If today's story moved you, taught you something new, or simply made you feel seen, we'd love for you to share this episode with someone else. Also, don't forget to tune in to Plains Media for the next episode. Until next time, remember, your story matters.